You are listening to the Drew and Jay podcast, brought to you by 21 Media Productions. He is Drew Lasker. I am Jay Marriott. And this is episode 25, where we head to the capital, the big smoke, the city of Lions, as we sit down with GM of the London Lions, Brett Berman, to discuss Europe, domestic competitions, and the future. Mr. Lasker, we had a cheeky week off. Well, I had a birthday week. How was your Easter holidays?
Man, you know what? It was nice to have a break. Had a surprise party in Manchester for my wife's brother's 40th. I know you was out there in Kent doing your thing and off the radar, but my Easter week was filled with women's basketball. I watched the Women's Euro Cup game last Wednesday. Last night, I watched the NCAA championship. And then this Wednesday, today, as this podcast drops, I will be watching the London Lions.
7-point difference. They got to get it.
So shout out to the women, man.
Man, absolutely love that. I was catching up the same March Madness, always keeping an eye on the Lions. Let's hope that they can do that, especially for my boy, Coach Kramesh. Shout out. Get it done. I was on a roller coaster last week, mate. So that was good fun. A roller coaster or two, and thoroughly enjoyed my birthday, which my son's was 2 days afterwards. So it was a little treat to ourselves. And how glorious. You'll understand this, Drew. As a dad with more than one child, like, what a pleasure it was just to walk around my son and, like, you know, we just could make a decision, you know? So it wasn't like, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. It was just literally, we were just vibing, wandering around. What do you want to eat, son? Yeah, I'm good with that. Yeah. It was cool.
Wow, yeah. Oh, man, that's light work, man.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a birthday treat, you know? So, like, yeah. I got to relax. I mean, standing in those queues is hell, but, you know, it was a lot of fun, and now back to business, right? So let's get on with it. Let's get our guests into the room.
Yes.
And let's get Brett Berman in to the pod.
Let's go.
Okay, let's welcome our guest into the room. Brett, welcome to the pod.
How are we doing, guys? Third time's a charm. I feel honored.
Let's keep it going, man.
This is the regular thing, man. You are a featured guest, man, once a year, man.
Do I have the record or no? Who's the highest?
Might be.
I think it is. Yeah. We don't recycle very often on here.
I mean, I find it really cute that we've all gone with the same backwards hat. So that's really cute. But we always warm our guests up with a little quick fire. Now I'll ask you a question. You have to give me a one word only answer. And the best thing is, nobody's as bad at this game than Drew Lasker. So are you ready?
Perfect. Let's do it.
Okay, this is the Marriott Minute. The British Basketball League rebrand.
Fire.
Favorite Euro Cup away venue.
Cluj.
Favorite British Basketball League away venue.
Newcastle.
Best moment this season. And you don't have to say coming on the pod, it's fine. We understand.
One word answer. Shush.
You can give me more than one word on this one. Go on.
That's a tough one. Personally making my British Basketball League broadcasting debut.
Oh, there you go. Love that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good one. London Lions.
Does he have to be careful with this one, Jay?
Yeah. He's got to stop thinking so much. Just say what came in your head.
Got to be politically correct. Trailblazers.
Sam Decker.
Stud.
Matt Morgan.
Flamethrower.
Your unsung hero on the team.
I got people. I got a bunch of people. I'm going to list some people here. I know it's a one-word answer.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you can have a few. Go ahead.
Shea Gordon, Yasin Tranos, Artem Gusiev, Peter Bryan, Jason Henley, Jerome Cordy, Ashley Duran, Andy Rainbird, DeAndre St. Mart, Lizzie Harrison, Ivan Grotsev, Maciej Kubacki. Keep going down the line. All the game day crew as well.
The team behind the team. Yeah, yeah. He's just making sure if everyone listens to the pod, they get love. Coach Bozic.
There's words I want to use that I just don't think people understand what my context is, and then I'm going to get canceled. So I don't want to say stuff like that.
You can elaborate. You.
He's a beast.
One word to describe yourself.
Straightforward.
And that's this week's Marriott Minute. Great job. It's harder than it looks.
Harder than it looks. You put me on the spot. I know it's supposed to go quick, rapid fire, but I don't want to say the wrong things here.
Jay, that's pretty good, man. I got to give you kudos because we're talking about a guy that has not probably the most difficult job in the British Basketball League, and you got his head spinning, man.
Open him up to start with, you know? Let's go.
Yeah, I think those hamstrings are loose now, I could say.
We're ready to go.
Well, I know that Brett's going to get you excited, man, because he's a regular. But Brett, man, again, before we get started, man, we just want to really appreciate you always showing us love for 3 years now, man. And I understand how busy you are, but you always, for the fans out there, always take time. Anytime I text you, ask any questions regarding London Lions, always get back to me straight away. So I appreciate that, man. But let's start here. Last year, the final game of the Euro Cup season, you guys, I vividly remember Sam Dekker limping through that game, and your roster was pretty much, from a health standpoint, was really struggling, and you guys lost in the first round to Barcelona. Just at that moment, as you were reflecting on moving forward to next year, what was your first thoughts in regards to what you got to do to that roster to level it up to where it became this year?
For sure. So that game when we lost, it was, I think you said we were limping around. Like, we were literally limping around. Sam, we had to have hard conversations with Sam because he wanted to play. Sam was probably at like 40%. He was literally limping around the court, couldn't close out, couldn't do these things, but he's tough. I mean, he's tough as you get. And he wanted to play. It wasn't a me and Sam talk. It was a group talk. It was him, coach, his agent, the physios, the doctors, everyone. And it was like, look, at the end of the day, the player has the final say. He knows his body better than anyone. And when he tells us, like, I'm here, I'm playing in this effing game, like, he's going to play in this effing game. Like, that's, you listen to the guy. So it was tough. He gave everything he had. And I think we got to a point, like in the fourth quarter, we just had to get him out of there because, you know, you could tell he was just hurting. So, you know, we had a situation where we had guys playing out of position that whole game. Costa Kofus, who was incredible for us all season. He was a double-double, 12 points, 10 rebounds, block and a half, contesting everything at the rim. He had a personal situation at home and we let him leave, you know, a few weeks prior to that. So we were without him. Had some, you know, other personnel leave on our team as well. And we just had guys playing up. We were just small at that point. So we knew it was a situation where, you know, we had to realize, okay, this is a team, Barcelona, that's probably one of the favorites for the championship. Measure where they are and measure where we are. And you just had to be real with yourself. You know, they're here, we were here. We weren't, from a personal standpoint, we weren't up to standards with them. And, you know, we had to match. You know, I wouldn't say we had to match, but it's a litmus test for me, for everyone to look and be like, okay, this is actually what it takes to win at this level from a roster building standpoint, from a size standpoint. So it was good for us to basically see where we actually stack up against the best. And, you know, we had a good run, but we knew we were where our shortcomings were.
But then also on that point is, I remember before the Euro Cup competition started, right? And from a fan perspective, we just wanted us to win one game. I remember everyone was just would judge your success if we could win one. But then as you guys started winning more and more and more, we started to get the belief that, oh, this team actually does belong in Europe, to the point to that game. It was funny because I know I was disappointed, fans was disappointed, but I think that was a sign of respect for the team that you had come so far that we began to expect you guys to win.
For sure. I think the biggest misnomer is everyone uses this word Europe. Like, there's levels to this. Like, Europe is, yeah. Europe is, there's a big difference between Europe and, you know, the big boys, and it's everywhere. It's in every competition, every sport in the world. So, you know, you can say what is good enough to win a game, win two games, and be good in Europe. But to your first question, like, Badalona last year was, you know, they were the real deal. And that's the caliber, you know, you're trying to get to, as opposed to just win the games that you're supposed to win. And the variance between those top teams and these bottom teams in any competition is huge. It's night and day. So, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it's there's levels to it. That's the best way to put it. Like, you can be happy with winning a game or two and showing people you belong, but there's a difference between, like, you can belong and, like, you can actually shake things up. And, like, this year was one of those where, going into the season, I think we had, like, the second lowest odds of winning Euro Cup. And then fast forward 2 weeks before the playoffs, we were, like, the third favorites. And I don't know who makes these odds. I don't know the science behind it. But I saw it at the beginning of the year, and I was just like, who's am I looking at the same thing these guys are? Like, yeah, I get it. But that was basically just a no respect waiver stamped on London, because they had never been there, never did this. And people put such a precedence on continuity, on tradition, on history. And it's really hard to just build a program overnight. That's why, you know, team you allude to, Badalona, has, you know, they start off with Ricky Rubio and all these guys, and they just build, and they bring guys up through their youth program. So it's this year I think we showed people that, like, this is a real program, as opposed to just putting 12 guys on the floor together and play games.
So the opportunity of doing these pods all the time is to give the fans a perspective that they may never get to see or hear. And I want to allude to you kind of personally, because, like, to coin an American phrase, like, you know, you're a basketball sicko. You know, that's the word that they would use in the States. As soon as that, what's the process for you that you start moving on to next season after that game? Like, as soon as that game finishes, just kind of talk to the fans, just kind of how crazy the basketball world is and how quickly you got to move on.
For sure. I think from my position, it's one of those where it doesn't, just because the Euro Cup season ended doesn't mean that, okay, next year the book flips over, you know, the script flips. Same thing with the British Basketball League. Once the season ends, we don't just flip over. It started probably like 7 months ago. It started with the countless phone calls, meetings. First of all, every time we go on the road, it doesn't matter where we are, like myself, Yas in Toronto, it's like our days are filled with meetings, and it's agents. It's, and this is what people don't understand, is like, it's not just for the London Lions, it's for the British Basketball League. Like, we go on countless meetings where, you know, an agent is just has these 50 clients or whatever, and they're trying to pitch their specific three or four. But then it's like, hey, you know, I have these guys here. Tell me about the other teams in your league. Which do you think would be the best for this guy here, here, here? So that cycle never ends. It doesn't just because a season ends, you don't just move over. It's literally been for the past year where my phone today, I've had 4 or 5 text messages, and I've had 2 phone calls, and I've probably another 3 the rest of the day going on with other agents and people. And they want to just talk about, hey, tell me what you think for X, Y, and Z. So that's just like the holistic picture for how this position works. what really happens on the day to day is like you start internally, you start with your self-evaluation. So, you know, the one thing is there's ebbs and flows to like the whole season. We have players who have been like this, players who go down, and you have to evaluate them through the whole season. We can't just say like right now is a big inflection point for us. It's basically we clinched the league already, you know, 30 days ago, whatever it was. And we had X amount of games. Now to this date, we have three more. So there's opportunities where we're tinkering with lineups, tinkering with people to see how they play in this role to evaluate them for next year. Because the roster, when you play so many games, guys are going to go in and out of the rotation. So we're always evaluating internally our own people just to see how they are. And it's not just players, it's coaches, it's staff, it's everybody. Because we want to see who's an everyday guy, who's showing up every single day with the same mindset, same energy, same all that. So that's the first component. Once the season ends, it's just like NBA free agency. Everybody waits to see what's going to happen with the big five or six. You know, I forget who was this year, but I think, I forget who was this past season, but normally like whoever the big marquee free agents is, all the other teams hold their cap space just to see where that guy's going to go, because there's going to be assets being dumped. Teams have to be cash in and cash out teams where they're basically taking on expired contracts. They're holding that leverage just so if they say, hey, we want to rebuild or do those things. So you wait. It's literally just a, you know, it's a pendulum. It's a ticking time bomb for when that first domino falls and everything goes into place. In our side, you know, for the domestic players, you're always evaluating them. For the import players, it's that dominoes. So you wait to see what's happening with the big clubs for here, for this. And then it allows you to say, how can we get underappreciated assets? Because there might be players in the EuroLeague who were numbers 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 in the rotation, the depth chart. And now because they're waiting for the dominoes to fall and other teams have allocated all their money towards these bigger players, that means they've dropped down a level in terms of roster allocation. So now we have to wait and see, okay, who's going to be available at this price point? And it's something that European basketball is just an open force. There's no transparency. You can't just go online right now and say, how much does X person make? How much does this make? How much is this? So it's all about trust and navigating the bullshit. Just calling a spade a spade. So we spend all this time deciphering and getting out and trying to find like what's the real, what's the facts. Digging in with the agents, digging in with, the, you know, just people in this industry, you know, to find out kind of what's real, what's not. And then you wait for those dominoes to fall. So I know this is a long-winded answer, but it's something where you basically just have to circumnavigate the whole industry and the whole market in itself and to see who becomes available. That's kind of like the holistic thing. But then you have, you know, Summer League, you have all these things where you evaluate. There's really good players who everybody wants a two-way, everybody wants a training camp, everybody wants an Exhibit 10. And it's, you know, from a British standpoint, I get hit up all the time. Everybody's like, hey, this kid had a great year in college. This kid had blah, blah, blah. Are you going to go after him? You know, without naming any of the guys, I'm sure we all know who I'm referring to, but all the main players in college basketball right now. And it's for me, I say like, no, I'm not wasting my time right now doing that, because for them, you know, they have their own plan. Their plan is, everybody in the world wants to get to the NBA. They want to put on an NBA training camp uniform. Even if it's 20 days, they get to be with an NBA team and be in camp. They're saying, I want to sign an Exhibit 10 contract. An Exhibit 10 contract just basically means the NBA team gets your training camp rights. So when they eventually cut you, you have an allocated spot on the G League team. So a lot of these kids who are in college basketball, they might say, I want to try for that Exhibit 10. I want to try for that G League spot. And people forget the G League is very, very hard to get into. So me personally, and with the London Lions, I don't want to say waste our time, but it's not the right way to go about my job to sit here and, you know, try to spend time, energy, resources. You know, time is everything in this industry. You don't have enough time. Before we got on this call, you guys were joking with me because I was filling out hit orders and stuff like that, and literally taking sock sizes for next year and stuff. You know, there's just none of hours in the day to do everything. So, you know, for the British players who are in the NCAA, a lot of them, you know, who are good and they've proven they've done well at the collegiate level, their path is most likely hey, let me try 2 years to try to see if I can get a call up in the G League. And then if it doesn't work, they'll go to Europe. So I don't really spend time on those guys, just the guys who are kind of like on the outskirts out. And it's the same thing with the American players or the international players as well. We try not to waste time with guys who are saying, I want the NBA, I want this. We look for guys whose windows closed and come to the realization that, hey, I'm going to try Europe for the first time. And the British Basketball League is the best. Like I took this term from a GM in the NBA, basically said, you guys have the best soft landing spot for players. Hmm. And talking about the league, we do. We have the best soft landing spot. You know, Drew, correct me if I'm wrong. Your first job was in Plymouth, correct?
Yep.
Okay. I'm sure that was a very easy transition for you as opposed to going out somewhere else.
Absolutely.
And hence you stayed here your whole career.
Great fish and chips, mate. That's what you liked, didn't you?
So that's what we do. We try to find these guys who have like the soft landing spot, who can basically realize like grass ain't always green on the other side. Like it's not going to be what you experience in the States, but this is going to be the closest thing to a holistic lifestyle. Teammates, like we call internally this thing like adult college, because everybody on our team speaks the same language, same culture, same lifestyle. It doesn't matter if they grew up in Worthing. It doesn't matter if they grew up in London. It doesn't matter where they grew up, if they grew up in Wisconsin or they grew up in Minnesota. Like our guys, like it's adult college, because on most of these other teams, when these guys go to, the domestic players have their own lives, you know, and the imports just come and go. They don't really assimilate well because they know these guys are just going to be in and out of here in 8 months. So, you know, us, we have like a good bond, and we call that like the adult college, which is the soft landing spot. So long answer for you, but I hope I painted a picture of what the actual scouting, you know, template is.
No, that's exactly what we want here. And why we bring you on is to get that perspective. And you mentioned about how guys want to get to the NBA, which gives us a perfect segue to the coaching change, but we'll touch on that a little bit shortly. But I just want to round things out by a couple things, because the biggest thing, the narrative with the London Lions in regard to our community, it's always about money, right? And about the have and the have nots. But I want you to paint a picture with, I know you have to be careful because of what you just mentioned earlier about how things aren't printed, but just give the fans a little bit perspective, because when Paul Blake was on here a couple of weeks ago, he mentioned that in the EMBL that the Newcastle Eagles budget was probably about 2-3 times as less as a couple of teams they were playing, like Bakken, for example. Just give us perspective, because it's all relative, right? Like we look at London and people don't know. Everyone just assumes and they say London has a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of Europe, you really don't, right? And so let's just compare the Euro Cup competition of where London lies amongst that competition in regards to budget. And then I want to get to, because you did mention about Sam Dekker and about that conversation with his ankle. Shortly after that, it was announced that he signed a 3-year deal. And I just want you to talk us through, how do you get someone at Sam Dekker's level to be able to commit to the London Lions for 3 seasons? What's the selling? And ultimately, what's the selling point for London? Because it's not just money, right? Because like I just mentioned, in the grand scheme of Europe, you guys don't have as much money. So what's your selling point?
Sure. So the first part of that question. So I alluded to earlier. So money is not Europe is the Wild West. It's just an open forest with no fences. So like you don't know what anyone's making, not making. Even things that are publicized out there, like we joke about it. It's just like, yeah, okay, cool. A good story. You know, like it's and I'm not talking about like people on Twitter. I'm talking about like even if things are publicized by a beat writer or something like that, you're just like, okay, yeah, sure, buddy. You know? Yeah, good info there. I don't know what the other teams in Europe make, because there's two things that finances are allocated by. One, there's budget, which is your operating costs, and then there's your player budget, player and coaching budget. Player and coaching budget in Euro Cup, you know, we're on the low side, and people are going to listen to this and be like, BS, like, I'm a liar, I'm a fraud. Like, no, like, are you in this industry? Are you an agent? Are you a player? Are you this? Like, no, like literally this is what I do for a living. We are at the low side. And it's that's why this year was such a, you know, a great accomplishment, a great achievement, putting everybody together. Operating cost, it's all based on location. So our budget's going to be higher in terms of just full-fledged operations. I always tell people, like, the cost for us to go get a bus to go to Luton Airport to fly out for a road trip is four times as much for most of these other teams when they have to go take their bus to the airport. So operating costs, it takes, you know, it's ours is probably on the higher side in terms of what we just have to do to get and play basketball, not the players, but just do it. But from a playing standpoint, which is what everybody in this industry measures things by, it's for sure. There's 20 teams in EuroCup. Like, we're in that bottom third tier for sure. So, I mean, it's just, you go look at the higher teams in Spain, France, Israel, you're talking what Paul Blake said, 2-3 times more in terms of, you know, just players in itself. Sam Decker. So Sam is a unique story. And this is the one thing that I've come to grips with that I've learned on this job is everybody is its own CEO and president of their own company. Every single player has their own motivation. Some want money, some want playing time. I use this phrase all the time. Do you live in London and play for the Lions, or do you play for the Lions and live in London? And I'm sure you can, you know, understand what I'm trying to get at. Are you here for the right reasons? Are you here because you want to be in London, or are you here because you want to play for the Lions? And Sam is unique because he's got his own set of what's his why, what's his wish list, you know, what's his journey been? And every player has their own journey. I think he got to a point last year where he realized, like, look, from the first conversations we had, and he had a great post, I think after we won the Cluj game, I'm sure you guys all saw it. He put on Instagram, he was interviewed in that Flash interview, and they basically said, you know, he basically went on a really nice thing saying, you know, hey, like, just really proud for my teammates, coaches, organization. And then he quoted up top, he was like, everybody laughed at me for signing here last year. Did you guys see that? You know what I'm referring to?
Yeah.
And I think it starts with there. I think that's the first chapter of his book is, you know, he took a big leap of faith and he actually legitimized us jumping from FIBA Cup to the Euro Cup. Because like I said, there's levels to this. You go from there to there, there's levels. And he legitimized us there. Everybody, there was a whole wave of like, oh, how did they get him? How did they do this? All these conspiracy theories about it. And the reality of the situation was we were just real with him in terms of this is what we see from a basketball standpoint. This is what you're going to do. And everything that we said, we told him the good, the bad, the ugly. When I recruit all these players, I basically lift up the hood of the car and I show them what's underneath the hood. Because there's nothing worse than when people get here and they think that you've sold them on a bag of, you know, bag of false goods and
hope dreams.
Yeah. And think you're full of it. So there's nothing worse when you actually have to live with someone and they look at you every day and they basically say like, I signed for this team. This is BS. So we show everybody the hood of the car. Show everybody what's underneath the hood. And Sam was the same thing. We're like, hey, man, this is what it is. Like, this is the plan. This is how we're going to use you as a basketball player, X, Y, Z. And the one thing that I give to Sam as the president CEO of his company is basically everybody thought it was a little bit of gimmicky last year on the outskirts with how much praise he had for the British Basketball League and like, oh, he's, you know, blah, 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 777, London Lions, all this. And it's like, that dude genuinely cares about this league. And when I go out to dinners with him and his wife and his son, it's what matters more to him is being a trailblazer and being a kind of legacy piece for the British Basketball League, because he's had his up and downs. He's had his roller coasters. He's been cut. He's been traded. He's been in bad situations. He's been in good situations. He's seen it all. He's had like 13 different coaches or something like that in his basketball career, something crazy like that. So he's seen it all. And he basically felt when he came here that this was a great place for him and his family. He felt like he was part of something and he was actually doing something that, you know, a lot of these guys have a countdown in their head where once you get to past the dog days and and New Year's is over, you're like, man, 78 more days, 77 more days, 76 more days. And he was just like, I don't want to leave. Like, he wants to, you know, he wants to do what you do, Drew. Like, he wants to like move here, live here, be a part of this forever. So for him, it's real, it's authentic. And like, he actually cares about, he cares about this league more than anything. Like, it's something where he sees it grow. So for him, signing a 3-year deal was probably not the best basketball move on his part. Like, why would it be? Like, you have to bet on yourself in this industry and sign 1-year deals and assume you're going to get better and climb and climb and climb. And for him, he was like, I don't need to climb. Like, I've already hit, I've hit where I want to be. Like, this is where I want to be. So what's the point of trying to chase something that's already right in front of me? So, you know, for him, it was just a unique experience that, that him and his family got that he enjoyed. And, you know, he's happy here.
That gives us a good transition to somebody else that that I'm sure both yourself and he even said it on the pod, expected to be there for a very, very long time, and that's Coach Schmidt. You know, you guys were incredibly close. Great season last year. Excited, ready to go in the summer. And, you know, these things happen, right? The NBA comes calling. It's a job I'm sure that, you know, you didn't tell him to turn down. You know, I'm sure that it, you were happy for him to explore. But just kind of talk to us about how do you, do you plan for something like that? Where you sat there and you just thought, hey, coach is going to be here for a long time. Are you like some other clubs, you know, where they're always going to be thinking those steps ahead so that, that you know, there's always maybe 1, 2, 3 coaches that are on the radar that could fit the model if something went wrong? Or how does it work? Was it a complete surprise?
Yeah, it was a big surprise. So he was under contract for this season. So he was under contract with us. We didn't have to let him out. Especially the timing of it, you know, it was basically like 2 weeks before, maybe even less before the players were set to arrive. And we had signed players, you know, to come back who, you know, were expecting him and he was a big part of them being here. So it was something for us where, you know, I never want to be in a position where I'm taking away something that somebody works for their whole life. And for somebody like him, getting to the NBA was his North Star. You know, despite having a great experience here and being able to cultivate, you know, the fabric of his, you know, professional coaching, you know, era, you know, for him, it's just more about, look, this is the NBA. The NBA calls, like, you know, like, I don't know when. It's only 30 teams. Last time I checked in the NBA, you know, maybe Bron puts another one in soon and they expand to 32 with an additional one. But there's only 30 teams. So, like, do the math. It's very, very hard to get, you know, you're talking about 10 coaches, 10 coaching positions each team, 300 jobs in the world. So for him to get one of those phone calls, you know, for us, we just basically had to say, like, look, like, this is going to be a hard decision. There's going to be a lot of pissed off people. It's going to be a scrum. You know, it's going to be a pain in the ass. You know, we're going to basically handicap ourselves going into the season. We got a lot of big decisions, a lot of things to do. But it was like, you know, I'm in no position to tell someone like, hey, no, you can't chase your dreams. Like, this is what you work so hard for. You know, who am I to sit there and say like, no, don't do this. So, you know, we gave him, you know, free open rein to talk to these teams. And there turned out to be multiple of them that were inquiring. And, you know, when the offer from Atlanta came in, it was just like, hey, man, like, you know, go kill it. You know, go make us proud. Because at the end of the day, like, whatever you do, you're always going to have that. Like, how many times do we hear about Chris Finch and Nick Nurse? And it's like, they have their legacy with them. They're doing these crazy things, but they're always tied back to the British Basketball League. And for him, that was kind of the message to him. Like, go be Chris Finch, man. Go be Nick Nurse. Like, go do that. Like, make London proud. Do what you have to do. You know, carry, you know, be like a, I don't want to say flag bearer, but be an icon for the team. Like, do, you know, follow in those guys' footsteps. So, you know, hopefully he gets that chance to do that. And, you know, there's, you know, hopefully synergy and legacy with that. So, but yeah, that was the backstory. It happened, you know, right at some, towards the tail end of summer league. We had a firestorm, myself and Yasin Tranos. We had maybe, when I say hundreds, I mean hundreds. We're not talking about 100, 200. We're talking about 500, 600 Wow. Many people reach out to us within 72 hours. Because you got to realize everybody who's an assistant coach at any level, no matter how good of a job you have, you sit there every single day and you said, what would I do if I was the head coach? Or if I was the head coach, I would do it this way. And it doesn't matter where you are. So we had guys who were making millions of dollars reach out to us, you know, say, I want to come be the head coach of London Lions. And you're thinking to yourself, like, why would you leave one of the best NBA jobs to come? And it's just the reason I said, guys want to run. They want to be the captain of their own ship. They want to run their own thing. And we had everybody in Europe, current head coaches, assistant coaches, guys, you know, literally without saying names, you know, things that would throw you out of your chair right now if I told you the people who were interested and wanted this, you know, guys who had been head coaches at the highest of the highest level and of international, of the NBA, of college, of all these things. So it was a very attractive thing for us, but it was difficult for us as well because we had such a time crunch. And, you know, for those people who don't understand, hiring a coach is not as simple as just hiring a coach. Hiring a coach is not as simple as just hiring a basketball coach, is what I meant to say, is there's a lot of legalities that have to go into it. You have to think about the visa situation if you're going to hire, you know, a foreign coach. You have to go through all the procedures with making sure, you know, the job is posted for X amount of time and giving X amount of days and filling the quota that you need to do within the governing bodies here. So we had a situation where we said, okay, if all these quotas need to be filled in this time and our players are coming in, basically, long story short, is like if the players are coming in 13 days from now and you only have 10 days where you have to do these things, we basically have 3 days where we have to go find a basketball coach. So we spent, realistically, we probably interviewed about 25 people. Probably did about 4 in-person interviews, more or less. Probably did about 25 over the phone. And probably had a couple hundred phone calls as well as like feel outs, feeler processes, and got to a point where, you know, we knew what we wanted to look for prior to this whole thing. We wanted someone who was going to be for the players, about the players, have a great mix of international, NBA. You know, it's important. It's not because the NBA is the holy grail of basketball. It's because, you know, the one thing the NBA teaches you is like, it's not about you. It's about the players. The NBA is a players' league. For good, bad, worse, ugly, that's the one thing you learn is you learn that it's like, you know, kind of check your ego at the door kind of thing. Like, you know, you have to adapt to the, you know, making sure you get the most out of the players. And then international coaching is obviously kind of the opposite. Like you have to learn how to be a leader of men, be someone who goes to war with these guys, and they have to be in the foxhole with you, because if they're not in the foxhole with you, then you got a problem. So, you know, coach, you know, Borzic was one that just came super highly recommended. We spoke to him maybe over the course of like 5 days. And every time we spoke to him, you know, Yas and I kind of got off the phone and we were just like, this is the guy, you know, like we're like, you kind of have when you're having so many phone calls, so many things, you just kind of have that, you kind of have that little, what I'm trying to say, but I don't know the word for it. You kind of have like the like intuition a little bit where you're just like, all right, this is it. And then we put him through the ringer in terms of like, how would you use this player? How would you do this? You know, long, extensive interview processes for everyone. You know, for him specifically to like, you know, if you're here in a week from now, which is going to be the reality, like, tell us, like, how's this going to work? How's this going to do this? And, you know, we think we've hit a home run. You know, we think, you know, he's been great. You know, he's played a huge success. It's not easy to get guys to buy in at this level. It really isn't. Like, X's and O's is a huge part of professional basketball coaching. It's huge. It's the difference between winning and losing games. Managing players is the difference between winning and losing the locker room. And you can't win games if you haven't managed the locker room. And, you know, he's done a great job in terms of getting everybody to buy in and understand that, okay, everyone's going to be in the foxhole with him. Like, you know, they rock with him at the end. Like they all do. Everybody rocks with him. Whatever he says, whatever he does, like everybody adapts. We had Sam Decker coming off the bench this season. he was our leading scorer. He was, you know, Euro Cup leading scorer, second in PIR. You know, he was the guy. And if everybody can see that he had Sam coming off the bench, you know, second half of the season, like, there's trust there from everyone. You know, they'd be like, who is this dude, you know, coming in and having Sam come off the bench and being able to manage all the players to know that, like, okay, this is your role. You guys are all individually good at what you do. But we've had guys like, I know I'm rambling here, but, you know, Gabe Olesenny and Matt Morgan just got named first team All Euro Cup today. But, like, yep. You go look at Dante Grantham, you go look at Connor Morgan, like, those guys had career years this year. You know, Luke Nelson, you go look at his efficiency and what he's done, and his minutes have dropped this year, but his production, his efficiency is skyrocketing. And just like that, getting Luke to buy in, getting Luke to realize, like, we don't win these games without you. Like, yeah, you might not have the minutes you want, but you play just as big a role as Tariq Phillip, who's starting, as Matt Morgan, who's starting. So, you know, he's done a great job of just getting everybody to buy in. So that's the long-winded answer about how the coaching search goes.
Yeah, and being around your team this year, as crazy as it might sound, because last year, obviously, I went to Greece with you guys, and I thought that your culture was unbelievable with Ryan. I feel like this year it's on another level, and he's just such a nice, genuinely nice guy. But, you know, the last time that we sat here, the British Basketball League, in regards to production, has gone places that I, you know, Jay and I'm not sure about you, of places that's unimaginable. You know, I've been getting snapped in all different type of places in North America, which is mind boggling to think. And when we had Paul Blake on here again 3 weeks ago, the one thing that he said, you know, speaking to these clubs in regards to the Eastern Europe and the EMBL league, one thing that he said that they said was, your league is going to blow by our league. Being in the circles that you're being back and forth to the States, what are you hearing about the British Basketball League right now at this moment in time?
I get the same thing you do. I get pictures all the time, just from people being at the gym, and, like, there's a television on and it's playing a Surrey versus Leicester game, and they're like, yo, like, that's, you're in this league. I'm like, yeah, that's us. Like, that's our league. It's British Basketball League. So I get that all the time. I think that's from the state side. I think, you know, people are aware, people watch, you know, and anytime there's live television on in the middle of the day, you're more prone to watch that than a rerun. So, you know, it's good for the people over here who are, you know, the one thing I always joke about is, like, I'll be at, like, the busiest airport in the States when I'm flying sometimes, and all the bars at the airports have the same television on nonstop. They don't just, like, start changing the channel for what people want to watch. So you'll be at, like, JFK, you know, be doing a trip, and I'll, you know, when I'm on my way over to London, and it's like, you'll go walk from gate 20 to gate 55 or whatever, and you'll pass 45 TVs, and at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because they have, like, the Yankees game on the night before, they have the Knicks game on. So the television stand, so you're walking through the busiest airport in the United States, one of them, and, like, there'll be a British Basketball League game playing on that channel because it's the same channel, those guys, and, like, people will be sitting there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and, like, those are the things where, like, I just, like, pinch myself and I'm like, damn, like these guys are doing a great job with this, like, this is pretty cool. But that's on the stateside approach. Like, within the industry, it's what Paul said. It's I think a lot of people realize that they're going to start losing kind of what they hope is their bread and butter in terms of getting players. At the end of the day, finances are king. So if you offer somebody more money, they're always more inclined to go to where they want to go. But you're starting to see the shift. You're starting to see people understand that, why would I go to some of these other countries when I have this option right here in the UK? And from a basketball standpoint, the number one area that needs kind of the shifting of what's going on, and I think it's been tremendous, has been the internal industry, which is the agents. Because at the end of the day, if they have offer A and offer B for these two places, they want to go somewhere where A, they know their players are going to get paid on time, but B, somewhere where they can benefit their career and not just be stuck in a spinning cycle. And our league has trumped all that, especially over the last 2 years. You know, kudos to Paul and Bristol and Caledonia. People always say, like, oh, what's the big deal about going to Europe? Like, who cares? Who cares? Like, no, those things actually do matter in the industry. Like, you have a 10-team league, you get four of the teams going or playing international competition. It helps profile. Like, this industry is all about profile and what you do. And, you know, if you have an opportunity to go to Leicester and you have, you know, or you're going to Surrey or you're going to Plymouth or you're going to Cheshire, like, You don't think it helps Aaron Ray and LaQuincy Radu when they smash us in the trophy final? Like, you don't think that helps those guys? Like, you don't think that means anything? Like, if our name was the make up a city in the United K and our team name was the Dolphins and we were just a random team, it's, you know, tree falls in the floor. Does anybody hear it? Like, no, like, you just beat the Euro Cup team in their cup, you know, it is a trophy, but like for everybody in the rest of the industry, you know, it's the cup. It's like, it's their international cup week. Mm. It's like, yeah, you just beat London. You just beat the Euro Cup team in there. Like, you don't think it helps those guys? Like, come on now, like, wink, wink here. Like, I think everybody understands what I'm trying to say. Like, yeah, like it helps them. Like, that's what they take to market. That's what they do. But it's not so much just because you do it on the big stage and trophy, you do it during the regular season. Like, you know, when these guys go and they have monster games and, you know, go look at Ricky McGill, like, he gets MVP at the ENBL. Like, he's having a great year here domestically. Like, you don't think that helps him? Like, hell yeah, it does. Like, you don't think it helps Newcastle though on the same front? Hell yeah, it does. They just produced an ENBL MVP. So their case study for the next 3-4 years is, hey, we just had Ricky come in. Ricky did this, blah, 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 blah. He was a BBL, a domestic MVP, British Basketball League MVP. He was ENBL MVP. Like, as an agent, I'm not an agent, but if I'm playing, you know, the agent, putting my agent hat on right here, like, I'm going to Newcastle, even if the money is 10 to 15% less as opposed to going for the team in random country A, B, and C. Like, there's trajectory in everything. And our league, despite only being 10 teams, has surpassed all those others where 3-4 years ago, you know, we wanted to be. So Paul's right. It's only going to get better. And for all the skeptics who are, you know, skeptical about all these things, like, cares? Like, have your opinion somewhere else. Like, it's not real.
Keep your glass half full, fellas. Come on.
It's not a real opinion. It's like, I'm telling you what the actual, at the end of the day, all that matters is the industry. All right. The industry is the agents, the coaches, the marketplace. It's all that matters. And everything I'm telling you is real spit from the agency, from the industry. And that's how this works.
Man, love that. I mean, look, I could continue for another couple of hours just picking your brains and stuff like that. But we've kind of come to the end and we got to let you go because I'm sure you've missed about 30 phone calls already. But, you know, we're really thankful. Hopefully we can get you back on here again because I think it's so important for the fans that they get to see the complexities of our league, you know, the complexities of our clubs. You know, and nobody's flying the flag more than the London Lions as they go out to Europe. And as I said, you know, you talk about knock-on effect. You guys stepping up a level has made, you know, Newcastle and Bristol and Caledonia make those big decisions to go into Europe. You know, Drew was waiting 20-odd years to get that opportunity and Paul got, you know, pulled into action because of the London Lions. So, you know, it's been a pleasure to sit down and pick your brain, Brett. We appreciate it.
No, for sure, man. Appreciate you guys. Love what you guys are doing. Keep on at it, man. Keep on at it. Appreciate
Thanks,
you guys.
Thanks, man.
All right, Brett. We'll See let you get soon. On, man. Thanks, man.
So long, fellas.
Jay, major shout out to Brett Berman. What an interview. I mean, I love how the openness we're getting. We got the same from Paul Blake and these guys that are in big time positions. They aren't hiding from any questions, man, which is great for our fans, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, we just want the insight, and that is exactly what we try to do on the podcast. Is we try to sit here not just as ourselves, but we try and sit here as the fans, right? And we try and figure out, you know, I try and take the temperature of the socials and some of the things that are coming up and they're talking about, or just some misinformation, you know. So it was good to see somebody like Brett Berman, you know, really lay it on the line, like what it's like to be a GM, how he's had to, you know, be flexible, because everybody just sees it as rosy at London Lions. Oh, there's loads of money there. There's no problems, you know. So it was great to see, you know, him having to go from Coach Smith to Coach Bozic, and like how, you know, how he's managing these players and agents. You know, it was great. I could have gone on for another hour or two for sure.
Yeah, and it's great to get the perspective from the GM, because the GM is a new role in our league. I don't believe there was a GM when you were coaching at Plymouth, and even now today, I mean, the only ones I can think of that have them is Surrey, Caledonia, and that's it, right? That's the only GMs we have. So it's a role that's very fascinating for our fans to learn what exactly goes into it. But, I mean, we ate up so much time in that great interview. We only have a little time remaining. So let's get to it. Let's get to hot topics brought to you by SoFab Sports. And I want to start with fan engagement, because the last time we were on here, we had Tahir Hajet, and we talked about how we can continue to grow that. And we saw a beautiful thing with the Sheffield Sharks and what they did when they went to Leicester a couple of weeks ago, and now going to Manchester at the @_UK. Got a coach full of them. I'm here looking at my phone now at this beautiful clip of them cheering outside the bus. And this is exactly what we were talking about in that podcast, right? About building a new culture of fans, and not only at home, but away as well.
Yeah. And it's just like nowadays you want to be let into every side of a club, right? So back in our days, like they probably only really cared about like, who are the new sign-ins? Probably only the bigger sign-ins. And now everybody wants to know, like, what's going on with the club? What's going on with the fan base? What's going on behind the scenes? How do you guys travel? Just had that conversation right now. What's a GM's role? Like, people want to know now, get that information. And also as well, just like we try to do here on the pod, is you want to see it from as many different viewpoints as you possibly can. So it's not just about the professional photographer anymore. Like, we want to see the cool behind the scenes videos. You know, I always love those clips now that you see like on any of the socials in terms of basketball, where you're kind of behind the scenes of the scene, you know, and you can kind of see what's going on behind that, rather than just all the polished stuff that they get. You know, you want to see the elements of the player interactions, or the coaches interactions, or referees interactions. So no, I think it's all going in a positive direction. And you know, we saw from the feedback from the pod with Tahir and stuff like that, just people loved engaging with that, you know, agreed with it. I think maybe they thought that, you know, they were all going to come in and paint loads of roses and not say what could improve, and they were really honest and made some really great points.
Most definitely. And I would love to see more clubs take ownership of that. And because in the past, it's always been clubs organizing their own away trips, but I think it's better when the fans can do it themselves. And so that's a great thing. So continue that. And next year, I love to see everyone in the team create that and continue on with these rivalries. That's what we need. But lastly, there's 2 weeks remaining, and then we get to the playoffs just like that. And I mean, there's so many directions we can go with this conversation, but where we got to start is, you know, I was tuned in because I didn't watch a lot of British basketball this weekend because, like I mentioned, I was away, you were away. But I got home just in time for that Caledonia-Cheshire game, and my goodness, what a game. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing a three-game playoff series in the semifinals with those two teams. It lived up to everything. But, man, Kwade Green, I mean, he, at this moment, he looks unstoppable. And I'm just interested to see the biggest thing I want to see in this playoffs is the coaches battle, because I want to see this season has been really focused on offense, right? And we talked about it. It's so much talent. It's very difficult. It's so many games. You got very little time to prep. But now with the playoffs coming, there's no excuses. And when the playoffs come, I don't want to see teams playing drop coverage on Quade Green and also picking them up full. What does picking them up full court do for you? It does nothing because you're not going to steal the ball from him. So it's just stupid. So, you know, what's your thoughts on with these playoffs looming?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like you said, it was a great game. I loved watching it. There was ebbs and flows. Like, I felt like Caledonia, like, just kept trying to pull away and Cheshire wouldn't let them leave. You know, but in saying that, I very much felt like Cheshire lost the game. And I was watching it and literally, like, I remember grabbing my phone. I was like, I need to message Drew, you know, because we've been talking about this and you were like, I really want to see now what the coaching's going into these playoffs. And also what you need to bear in mind is what's happening right now is Dan Routledge's favorite time of the year is head-to-heads. You know, how important these head-to-heads are and how important these games are. This was a big game for both clubs. Let's not take too much away from Cheshire. Like, obviously, Skylar White, he tried, you know, but he was just too sick to play. So they were quite an important man down. But they had Caledonia beat. And, you know, I'm sure you were saying the same thing at the screen, was that the one thing that you couldn't give up was the three ball, and especially against the superstar. And then we saw Rideau go under the screen
underneath
and gift him a three, which you know, gave him the gusto to get back into the game. You know, and I think tactically up until then they were fine. You know, it's just the late game. You tweeted out about it a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, was just, you're so annoyed by these fourth quarter breakdowns of teams. And, you know, Cheshire just seemed to capitulate. And you knew going into overtime, you know, that Caledonia had the momentum. And let's be honest, like when you got a star like Quade Green in that overtime, he played it perfectly, didn't he? You know, like he just was in his rhythm. So I'm with you. Like, you got to throw different things at them, you know, so you got to be at a, you know, whether you ice the ball screen, whether you blitz it, try and get the ball out of his hands. I have to give a shout out to Fraser Malcolm, you know, because I very much think that they were going to live and die on letting him get his, and he had a career night. He was fantastic and one of the reasons, but you don't go under the screen on Quade Green. Like, leaving Fraser open in the corner, that might be a tactic, but going under a screen on Quade Green, who's just a lights out scorer and can shoot, that is criminal.
Well, my point is, Jay, is that I need to be shown what is your plan of action defensively, which I can't say I've seen a whole lot of this year. And it's fine, because we mentioned it, these games moving thick and fast. These teams are playing 50 games plus or whatever. But the issue is that if you say, okay, I'm going to let Fraser Malcolm beat me, then that's fine. You say, okay, let's see if he can score 30. But the issue is Fraser can't score 25 and the head of the snake can't have 37. It can't happen. Like, you're going underneath the screens of Quade Green and playing drop coverage and you're leaving corner threes to Fraser Malcolm. Well, we know that's the only place on the court he's shooting. So, you know, that's, I wouldn't say frustration, but that's in the playoffs, things that I want to be able to see tighten up. I want to be able to start the game in the first 5 minutes and be like, okay, Leicester is trying to do this to Sheffield, and let's see how that plays out. And that's the kind of chess match I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. We're in the head-to-heads now as well, so everybody knows everybody. I mean, there's been enough. You've seen enough Quade Green. You know that now he is kind of – he really has released that Caledonia team, you know, so you've got to find a way to go and put the ball. You know, I think that Caledonia looked very different and very slow and lethargic with Bothwell with the ball in his hand. So go get the ball back in Bothwell's hands. Force him to go and be the creator and make things happen. Let me ask you something. Would you have been mad about Rye leaving his feet on that last possession, or did you feel like he had to do it?
Well, that's a great question. And you and I talked about this offline, but I'm not mad at that, because you're not thinking that a player is going to be that smart with that little of time to be patient enough to pump fake, right? You're throwing the ball, which that wasn't a play. Like, Quade Green was clearly looking to get his shot off, and he threw the ball to Paliza out of desperation. And usually in that situation, what does a player do? Just jack something up, right? And so defensively, you leave your feet anticipating. I think that's just a great offensive play. I'm not mad at Aaron.
And also as well, don't forget, like, even though they won, Gareth was beside himself because they let him get that three to keep the head-to-head. You know, like that felt.
But I'm like,
it kind of felt like a loss.
But I'm like, that's all. The only thing that can kill you is a three. So, like, why would I would stand five guys on the perimeter and let them take a two? Like, you're not taking a three. That's the only thing that can beat us. And so it's just that part of me annoys me. Well, let me ask you this, because I see it as a – I see as great of offensive players we have in this league is better than ever. I do see a lack of defensive IQ, and it's frustrating for me because I come from the school of Fab Flournoy, and we watch so much film that, like, stuff that like that just didn't happen. Do you think IQ or defensive IQ is something a player just have, or do you think it could be taught?
No, I think it can be taught, because, like, we've had many a conversation. I pick your brain all the time about Fab, you know, and remember, like, it really surprised me when you told me that Fab goes and finds the best offensive talent and then makes them double down on defense and get locked in. And we'll never know the answer to this, so there's no point in us, like, trying to get conjecture with it. Is who do you blame in those circumstances? So, for example, there might be people on the pod right now going, well, you know, Coach Thomas should have told him not to go under the screen. Well, I've been a coach, you know what I mean? And, like, I could be like, no, you always go over the screen on Quaddy Green, and it's just the moment, right? And that's where I think that you find the best players in this league, and the best players that play the game are the ones that in the big moments, because we're talking overall, it was a great game. It was up and down, you know, Caledonia have, like, you know, they've really relaxed. I'm surprised Gareth's not growing his hair at this point, because it just seems like much more flowing and much more chill.
Oh, beautiful to watch.
You know, Cheshire are just at your neck all the time. You know, like I said, it's like they're down by nine and then you're like, they're up by one. So it was a great game. But I think it's in those magical moments where you win a championship. And it just, I think everyone's got to tighten up on those things. Is it a player's fault? Is it a coach's fault? Are they getting the scouting reports? We're never going to know, are we? But it's frustrating.
But let me tell you this, as great as Cheshire has been this year, I'm going to tell you one reason why we won't see them at the O2 this year. One reason. You think you can guess what you think I'm thinking? What do you think is the one reason Cheshire won't make it there?
The rims. In the finals or no?
They can't make free throws.
Oh, free throws. Good point.
Aaron Rye could have sealed the game from the free throw line. And that's one of the best free throw shooters. We know about Rideau's free throw rolls. And so I think that's what's going to kill them in the playoffs. But just finally, I mean, one team that I'm really concerned about is their first time in I don't know how many years not winning, having a 20-game series. A season, and that's the Leicester Riders. I mean, watching them against Bristol, they were really exposed. And the reason why I'm worried about Leicester, because I've been seeing this traject for a while now, and they're a team that they don't play defense. They haven't played defense all year. They've been outscoring teams, the second best offensive team in the league. But one thing I've been noticing more and more is that they play a lot of one-on-one, which if you think about the past Leicester teams, their offense was the most complex, right? Because they got Pablo, they run all these beautiful sets, and they don't run sets anymore. Like, and this is just not Teddy Allen. This is everybody. They get the ball, and they just think and score, and it's too much one-on-one. And when they're not clicking, they look as ugly as they did against Bristol.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give them some credit for turning the season around, you know, so the season looked like it was a complete train wreck and maybe even missing the playoffs. So to turn that around and add an MVP caliber type player and, you know, Kimball's kind of recovered and he's back to classic Kimball Mack. I just don't like their front court, you know, like, you know, I just think bad shot selection.
And then
just from a front court perspective, you've got nothing to go down to. You know, I think like Mo Walker just doesn't look like he's got back to the kind of health that he needs to be in to be productive. And, you know, and I'm sure they were imagining him to be a massive piece. You know, Shelton's a hustle guy. you know, he's just going to go and, you know, find all the odds and ends that nobody else wants. So the problem you've got with Leicester is if you're not firing on all cylinders, you're not hitting shots, you've got nothing else to go to. Like you said, there's no complexity within the plays, and there's no real skill in the front court that can get them out of problems. So they'll be dangerous when Teddy Allen's flowing and hitting and Kimball's going and, you know, they're getting out and running. But like you said, that's not going to serve them in the playoffs, where you need to double down defensively. And I would probably even bet harder on like a Sheffield Sharks, because at least, you know, going into the playoffs, they're going to get stingy. You know, they're just going to make things real, real difficult. I don't know if this Leicester team can do that, or maybe they do manage to turn it on in the playoffs. But I think that this season is probably, you know, they're going to have to go back to the drawing board. You know, Coach Rob, Russ, Pablo, all those guys are going to lock themselves in a room and just be like, you know, they got to reinvent themselves now, I think.
They're going to have to hit the reset button. It really, their team really reminds me of our team in 2017 with Newcastle, when we had Jayshon Page and Kai Williams, and that just a whole new roster. And just like it, we had great individual talent, but like it just wasn't a Newcastle Eagles team. And so I think Leicester will look to hit the reset button. But hey, look, we're going to be covering the playoffs every week here on out for the next month. So a lot of interesting conversations that will be had for sure.
Man, exciting for sure. But that's it for us this week. You know, long form out there with the GM, Brett Berman, which we are massively appreciative of. So we took up all that time so that you fans could soak up all the knowledge. Thank you as always for your support. Until then, Drew, lead us out.
Yes, catch us back. We good. We refresh. We ready to hit this long final stretch. So, guys, make sure you join us on this journey on the way to the O2, and we'll catch you guys next week. Peace out.